this is the work I was doing being an intern at NetApp last summer. So there are a bunch of people from NetApp involved in this work, and real credit goes to them. So what we're trying to do is basically to build a fast inter-VM communication mechanism. This work is just about it. But we target it for the market of enterprise appliances. So let's take a look what they are. So typically, it's something what serves your request over the network. And you pay a ton of money for that. And the reason you pay is because it's designed to deliver an extra high throughput and highly available and scalable access. So in a typical appliance, we take example of a storage stack, but there is nothing specific about it. So you can more or less generalize these principles to any appliance. It's organized like that. So to achieve this high throughput, you have to run it in a single monolithic kernel, sharing the single address space of this kernel and doing just a function calls to speed up the access. And apparently, you have a set of problems with this setting. Any component can bring down the entire system. Like fault in any of them brings you down. You don't have performance isolation, so it's hard to reason about what's going on, and suddenly your system becomes unavailable just because one of them decides to do something weird. And of course, you have these problems of resource provisioning, which we all know all about, and like you either over-provision resources, and then you just wait them, or your system runs slower if you don't do this. So what we're trying to do, we try to run something like this. So we would like to split this original appliance into different virtual machines running on top of a single hypervisor. And each VM will be isolated by a virtualization technology. And maybe another argument towards doing fast communication is something like that. So even if you don't split your original appliance in a set of virtual machines, you sometimes want to collocate something on the same hardware. For example, like some other technology which checks integrity of the system. And the reason you can't just run inside appliance because they can be implemented in different operating systems, like here in FreeBSD and Windows. So, and benefits of virtualization are more or less clear. Yeah, we get this high availability by isolating components. Or we can do like, we have some paths to building micro reboots, rebooting one component, and for example, preserving file system cache in memory while rebooting device driver. We also preserve some partial functionality of a system in case of failure. We have a performance isolation. We can scale on a multi-core platforms better, something like that. We have better resource allocation. We can consolidate. We can load balance, do VM migration on VM tricks. We can introduce some non-intrusive updates, like we can do software updates through micro reboots, or we can migrate our solution to other hardware, upgrade the hardware, migrate it back. So, and of course, we can collocate computation and close to data. So the main problem, of course, is performance. It's unbelievable, or it's at least unclear if you can match the performance of a monolithic system in such split setting. And to solve this problem, you have to make several observations. First, this is true. Like, in this system, there is a huge amount of data movement across components. So there is no magic, and it will not go away. But you typically run a multi-core system, and your movements often happen between cores, not like in a traditional microkernel setting when you had one core and just you were fighting for fast process switch or something like that. IPC is connection-oriented, so once you establish the connection, it lives through the entire life of the appliance. And typically, you send a huge chunks of data, at least page granularity. There are no like single word messages which you can fit into registers. And what is more important, the system usually exhibits some multi-stage processing. So data once enters the system, and then it dereferenced multiple times at different stages. So, and of course, to solve the problem, we have to investigate what contributes to this cost. And not surprising, a lot of traditional costs go away, and we have only these hypervisor transitions and memory mapping or copying costs which you incur exchanging memory between virtual machines. And this can lead us to the following insight, the main insight of our work. Appliance is built by a single organization. So what it means? It means that it is inherently non-malicious and collaborative. It's built from pre-tested components which trust each other and collaborate to achieve a single goal. So naturally, we can trust, we can leverage this trust relationship and share memory read-only across all virtual machines. It sounds a little bit crazy because it's like uncommon to share anything between a virtual machine. But what it gives us? It gives us a fast inter-VM communication because now you can dereference data at any from any of the components. And so your IPC is basically just passing pointers between components, much like in, for example, Singularity microkernel, which does it with through language protection techniques. And you achieve a zero copy across the entire appliance. So the contribution of this work is basically to build the systems. First, we deliver this faster inter-VM communication. We provide an abstraction of single address space, but without requiring any modification to the traditional kernel, for example, Linux is in our case. And to evaluate and prove that it's actually work, we build a realistic setup of a network-attached storage, taking a NetOp implementation as a reference and evaluate it to see what's going on. Okay, design section. We have several design goals. First is performance. Of course, it's not surprising. But the second, more important goal is practicality. So we try to avoid any intrusive changes to the guest, to the environment in which we run, for example, like to the hypervisors, or to the guest kernels on which we operate. And we try to avoid any dependencies, so we want this methodology to be portable between different kernels and hypervisors. And of course, we want to have something more or less general, so you can use it at any level of a system, not only at some specific library level or something like that. So the major insight to achieve high performance and high throughput is zero copy. So the data enters the system once, as I said, and it just dereferenced multiple times from different components. And of course, yeah, let's build a single address space which allows us to do this. How we do this? We're running several virtual machines on top of a hypervisor. And we leverage the following observation. Like, traditional hardware allows us to build at 64-bit addresses. But a typical virtual machine has no use of it because it's designed for 32-bit addresses, and it's limited by the amount of physical memory. So you can freely, and there are no address single address space operating systems at the moment of the market, so it's okay. So we can leverage this fact and map memories of other VMs in a higher level addresses starting from some base address. And of course, we have to do that for all virtual machines, for all memories. So we start from base, and we know what the maximum allocation of memory we allow because it's no more than physical memory. And the next virtual machine will be always mapped somewhere here. And what it gives us a simple formula for translating pointers between virtual machines. Each virtual machine has a monotonically increasing ID, and as soon as you know ID, you know the position in memory because you multiply it by max memory and add base. So it's once you do this, you can access memory from anywhere. That's good. And when the third virtual machine joins this setup, and we map all the memories of previous virtual machines in the same higher addresses, so we can achieve a transitive zero copy. And we never incur a situation when someone sends our data back and we fault in our old memory because we cannot resolve it through this pointer translation. And we don't modify any line in Linux kernel code. We implement it as a kernel module. And we don't depend on a particular hypervisor. We use a Xen Grant reference interface for implementing this at the moment. But you can do this on top of VMware, I believe, as well. So a transitive zero copy after that looks very simple. As soon as data enters the system, it's available everywhere globally, read-only, but still available. And then you can send pointers to this data. So how we actually implement it? It's a high-level view of our system, and nothing specifically surprising going on here. But still, we're running on top of the Xen hypervisor. The gray VM is a part of Xen architecture. It's called domain zero administrative domain. And assuming two virtual machines, yellow and green, want to communicate, the feeder runs as a kernel module inside them. And any shared memory-based communication can consist of three parts, which are basically connection monitoring, memory mapping, and signaling. So we implement a kind of like automatic discovery mechanism. So to make the FIDO transparent, OVMs register itself in a centralized database. We leverage ZenStore. And then we automatically discover as soon as VM wants to connect, we just ask, okay, do you have FIDO? Yes, sure. Then start mapping memory, the memory mapping module. And for signaling, we use a traditional cross-core communication, cross-core interrupts to send a notification when data is available in shared memory. And on top of FIDO, we run, of course, FIDO doesn't give us much because it's just like some low-level IPC mechanism, and we want to traditional virtual machines communicate at the level of device drivers. So we implement several device drivers, specifically network device, memory mapped network here, and we also implement block device. So it's kind of like a natural design decision for us to have this device drivers connecting through a fast IPC. And then on top of it, we can run transparently the rest of the kernel here. It's like TCP stack. And again, to highlight that we only implement these two components. Everything else exists before us. So how our PCs are organized? Assuming we have two virtual machines which want to communicate, in a shared memory page, they share a traditional producer-consumer ring. So requests go one side and responses go another side. And each element of the ring contains a pointer to the data in a sender VM. But we can't go away with this simple architecture because often data consists of multiple parts spread all over the kernel. And this is why we introduce something like that. It is an example of traditional network buffer, SK buffer in a Linux kernel, which is quite common. And we want, of course, to send all the data. And if we start sending, filling the ring with that many pointers, it introduces too much contention on a cache. So it's bad, and it overflows the ring as well. So we introduce a construct of scatter-gather array. So elements of this array point to the actually pieces of data, and we put a pointer to the scatter-gather array to the IPC ring. And then IPC understands that it has to translate pointers to the read-only memory region, which is available globally. When you send it, you do this translation. And of course, you have to translate separately pointers to the scatter-gather arrays. And after that, it's translation is done. It's done one, and after that, it's available everywhere in the system. So you save costs of multiple translations. And I told you that we use event channel for signals. There is some amount of polling in a ring because always when you take the last request from a ring, you always check if something else is available. And usually it's available because we're running as a pipeline, as like system is constantly loaded. But there is no magic. As soon as you start sending like random requests, you will always incur delays of sending cross-core interrupts, and it's quite significant, can be. We implement these two device drivers, as I said. One is network, second is block. They both look like traditional device drivers in the kernel and exhibit a like natural interface transparent for the kernel. Network device supports a full zero copy because network stack is designed to support it. And so if you connect like four virtual machines with MMNet, you will see a full zero copy. Unfortunately, we cannot achieve this property with block device because it achieves a zero copy on write because everything happens okay. But when you do read a Linux block level stack organized or designed with an assumption that memory for the request will be allocated at a higher level, at the user level memory. So when you create a BIOS structure, you usually set up pointers to the memory which allocated previously. So this way you save zero copy between kernel and user level. So, and we can't basically reuse it because in our case, memory is always allocated in a device driver VM because it has to be globally available read-only. And if you request to read, you have to ask device driver VM to allocate memory for you. So this is a kind of a complication. So we do a copy in this case. And part of our work is evaluation. So this is important to prove that this actually achieves some performance and it's a reasonable approach. We'll evaluate four configurations for network devices. This is a traditional monolithic setup where like client and server part of the benchmark run in a single kernel and connected through a loop device. The second setup is a traditional Xen setup. Xen has a disadvantage of connecting OVMs through a domain zero. So on this picture, you have this domain zero in the middle, and you connect two VMs through it. And that, there is a solution to this. It's called Zen Loop. The people actually tried to solve this problem by sharing a huge buffer of memory between two VMs. And then you can avoid using domain zero, but still you incur costs of copying something into the buffer and out of the buffer on each send. And the force of cost configuration is our FIDO when we, instead of running Zen Loop, we run a memnet. And we run it on top of a 8-core, 16-gigabyte RAM machine. We use 64-bit version of Xen and Linux to support this single address space layout. And the benchmark is a netperf. And this is a TCP throughput. This is a reference loop implementation. So this is the best case you assume to achieve. The both like contenders behave quite poorly, and there are reasons for that because they incur like traditional Xen devices incur memory remapping cost, and like an Xen loop incurs two copies because it copies into the buffer and out of the buffer. And FIDO performs quite well, sometimes even outperforming monolithic case, which is surprising. But there are explanations because there are some inefficiencies on locking on multi-core in a TCP stack. In UDP, it kind of goes away. And we did UDP tests and latency tests, and the picture kind of the same. So no surprise that there are MMNet peaks at 9400 megabits per second at the size of 64 kilobyte buffer. Further, we evaluate, of course, block device, and it's again one setup is monolithic. We run to avoid costs of running something on disks. We introduce an in-memory TMPFS file system on top of which we run a loop device, so we can export it at a block level to other virtual machine. And again, on top of a loop device, we run a file system and then application which implements a benchmark. The second setting is a traditional Xen way. Two devices connect to virtual machine, exporting loop device, block level device between them. And a third configuration is FIDO, which is basically the same, but runs fast FIDO device driver. Again, we use the same hardware. We configure VMs with 1 gigabyte of RAM for application VN and 4 gigabytes to set up an in-memory file system, which has a size of 3 gigabytes. And we use an Iazone benchmark for this test. And okay, again, reference implementation monolithic. Unfortunately, it doesn't behave very well because there is a contention between TMPFS and EXT3FS. TMPFS, when you do a write to it, it incurs a soft page fault, and it tries to allocate a page. But unfortunately, all the pages are occupied by EXT3, which wants to stage requests in memory to achieve a better throughput. So Xen implementation behaves approximately close to the monolithic case, but FIDO performs them, and it's good because it does zero copy on write. So on read, of course, FIDO will be at the same level as this previous two. It's 39% faster, okay. And finally, we do this case study because, okay, we want to evaluate our setting of our IPC, and we want to evaluate our IPC in some realistic setting. And to achieve this realism, we build a quite realistic network attached storage, taking a NetApp storage stack as a reference, but there is nothing exceptionally similar between them, but still there are some design principles which we try to follow in this setup. So we run 4 virtual machines. Note that there is no domain zero in this experiment because we allow virtual machines to access devices natively. This is PCI pass-through capability of Xen, and this is the way how it will be implemented if you start running your network storage stack. Network device drivers access a physical device. It connects to a TCP stack in another VM through like FIDO communication mechanism. On top of TCP stack, you run network file system, which runs, of course, on top of file system. And then file system runs on top of RAID device, which hosted by the different virtual machine, and you connect them again through block level FIDO interface, and then RAID device runs on top of a 3-disk RAID array, and these drivers sit in a separate VM, and you connect them through a FIDO interface again. And this is, again, I highlight the components which we implement and everything else exists there. And we compare this architecture against two other configurations. First is monolithic, when everything sits in a single address space, monolithic kernel. And the second is like here, this is traditional Xen implementation when you use Xen split device drivers to connect these VMs. and the hardware is, again, the same hardware. We allocate each VM with a 1 gigabyte of memory, and except that file system VM has 4 gigabytes to do some caching, and we compare it against 7 gigabyte monolithic case. The disk array runs on top of a 64 megabyte per second disk, so you usually each write goes to two disks, and one is third one is used for checksumming. So you can anticipate the throughput around 120 megabyte per second, but there are some file system overhead, so don't expect it to be that high. But still, we have a realistic setting, and we use Iazone benchmark, copying an 8 gigabyte file over the NFS file system, which exported by this network attached storage. Again, sequential writes, monolithic reference implementation behaves quite well. It's 80 megabytes per second, always almost achieves a network limit of 1 gigabit networking. Xen native implementation lags behind significantly, and surprisingly, Fido even outperforms monolithic implementation. And there is, again, there is some magic here why it runs faster. The magic is pipeline parallelism. If you explicitly separate your components in on a different course in different machines, you can achieve some pipelining, explicit pipelining. And then if your pipeline is fully utilized, your cores run like in parallel. This is a very nice and efficient, like practical form of parallelism. But still, it's very hard to evaluate because we don't have means of evaluating how much you lose on connecting the stage and how much parallelism we have, but still it's nice. Sequential reads behave similarly, again, reference implementation, Xen native implementation, and Fido a little bit higher. Again, 13% better than monolithic. And finally, the realistic workload, TCPC, not that much of pipelining introduced by sequential workloads. It's a database workload. We run a database on a client machine, and database runs on top of a file system, which exported by our file system storage. And you can see that native Xen implementation significantly reduces throughput, but still Fido introduces only 3.1% slowdown. And it's a good result because in a realistic benchmark, you achieve an isolation over your virtual machines paying only the price of 3% of in performance. Okay, finally, conclusions of our work, the major conclusion. Okay, we match performance of a monolithic system, and it's quite unusual and quite unexpected. So microkernelization is possible. And there is still a space for designing a better communication mechanism for virtual machines. So you have to concentrate on that and start working in this space. There are both hardware solutions and better software solutions, and especially like important aspects of this design are trust models. So if it's possible to leverage trust model in your design, try to do that. It can significantly improve performance sometimes, especially these days when we want to treat virtual machines as libraries, like for example in this virtual file system virtual appliances, which are done, I guess, by Carnegie Mellon. End-to-end zero copy is important, so it's a good, and what is our contribution is building this single address space without modifying a traditional operating system. This is cool. But there are still some problems to solve. We have to implement a full zero copy. We have to solve problems of memory management, because if you give your memory read-only available, you somehow have to reclaim it, and we don't do specifically anything specific about this at the moment, so it's a major flaw. You have to work on the utilization of pipeline parallelism. Thank you. Now your questions.
So I have a question about the major flaw. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about it. It's a little strange that when I need to communicate to another VM, I actually write into my own address space as opposed to necessarily writing into theirs, where theirs is already mapped in. So I was wondering, especially for the zero copy in the TCP, what sort of mechanisms you already had in place in order to actually reclaim that memory, because if they actually need to use it and actually need to write on it, right, they will eventually need to copy it out so I can actually get it back. So it's not quite.
So, like, honestly, we don't do anything at the moment, because, like, the goal of this work was to test if this basic performance setting can work at all. So, and we believe it's possible to implement some memory management, some centralized memory management of top. It works for networking because you voluntarily, and of course it's everything is volunteering here, so you voluntarily release memory as soon as you hit the, like, as soon as you is the other end release this, the network packets, it goes back in the chain and released in a, like, the VM which allocated it. It works, it doesn't work that well in a file system VM because file system never releases pages until you ask it because it tries to cache everything, at least in Linux. And so this is, well, here we do a copy actually, because we have to, as soon as it reaches the file system, you have to allocate a new page and say, okay, your page is deallocated. But yeah, you have to work in memory management, and we believe it's possible, yeah. No real solution at the moment.
All right, thanks.
Rick Farrow. I like the idea in general, but I don't like one of your assumptions. You say you're running trusted, you know, software on the server itself. Most people run trusted software in the server, and the attacks come from the outside against bugs within the server. So it's just something I think you should consider. You know, if you have somebody who is able to inject hostile traffic against your appliance, then that could actually cause problems.
Yeah, but again, this is, I'm not claiming that you can apply this solution generally. So you need this trust assumption, that's true. So
okay.
Nothing, you know, comes for free, but still it's, In a networking stack, or like a network-attached storage stack, this assumption seems to be realistic. Everything is collaborative. Nothing works against you. And again, read-only isolation is good enough to prevent propagation of bugs because this VMs are designed to fail fast as soon as you, I mean, not VMs, kernels or like network storage components. As soon as you hit the bug, usually you try to panic the system immediately, so you don't usually anticipate propagation through this tech because otherwise you're dead. So,
okay.
So, yeah, but
sure.
I guess you're right in some way.
Irfan Ahmed, VMware. So
yeah, he always right. Yeah. Sorry.
So, you know, one of the reasons to be using virtual machines is for fault isolation. And of course, there's lots of benefits. I'm really trying to understand what the benefits are in this approach. So fault isolation is not being used here because there's no way, like if any one of the VMs in the pipeline crashes, you can restart it, but the entire application is not going to be able to recover. At least I have not seen anything that would suggest that something like that could be handled. Why use VMs for this purpose? What benefits are we getting?
Why use VM? First question, okay. VMs come for free with a bunch of benefits, which are not available in container or process level virtualization, like migration, cleaner hardware support, better isolation. I guess you can set up Xen. There is no inherent reason why Xen is less, or is like consumes more memory than your process level virtualization. Because if you like, the first work in this conference actually discussed how you can share everything between virtual machines. Also, okay, you probably lose some performance isolation, but no one knows. And VMs is an established technology. It's pragmatic approach. Just don't invent anything. So try to reuse everything what exists. And they constantly optimize. They constantly optimize for fast virtualization. So you don't actually incur performance overheads of virtualizing devices or something like that. And a lot of people work is in this area. So this is just a pragmatic setting. Second, yeah, why fault isolation? You have to pick a clean interface, and nothing comes for free. And in our work, again, we don't do anything about somehow transparently recreating the state after a micro reboot or something. But at least we have some pause, like in a second stage of some of our work, we can come up with some micro reboot solution. And since we use some pretty narrow interface of device drivers, and I'm not claiming we can separate file system interfaces because there are more states shared, and again, then micro reboot will probably not happen, but this is a good pragmatical approach to possibly develop this solution. Although you're right, nothing works at the moment.
Okay, thanks.
All right, let's thank Anton. All right, so now we're going to hear from Benny Gill. He's going to talk to us about why we should care.